You're listening to Church Tech Profiles, Episode 9 for the week of October 26th, 2020, Mike Smith. Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Church Tech Profiles. I am Van Metschke, and I am here with my buddy Mike Smith. Mike and I have known each other for...
Since mullets and earrings.
A very long time. Mike Smith, if you guys don't know, I don't know why you wouldn't know him, but right now he's actually in a new position, which we will talk about the whole journey and everything, but he is the live production lead at Prestonwood Church in Plano, Texas. But most of you would probably know that for how many years you were at Harvest?
31.
So for 31 years, you were in the technical department at Harvest Church, which if you guys don't know, that's they have a very unfamous pastor named Greg Laurie, who has made a little bit of a splash in the church world.
He's coming up.
He may be well known one day. When you left there, you were the... Were you the technical director? What was your title there?
Well, yeah, it was kind of a, I was the AV tech director. So it is essentially audio and lighting and some aspects of video, more like the display end of things, is not as much the cameras and content creation. That was a different department.
Right. So, but Mike and I have known each other for a long, long time. So he's actually a keyboard player. Most people don't know that he actually is a musician as well. Although I don't know how much you play anymore, but
not so much.
But that's actually kind of where we met. I was mixing a band and he was the fill-in keyboard player, I think.
Well, before that, I was actually just helping you guys set up.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The wagon wheel stage at Knott's Berry
Farm. Oh, yeah. That's right. Now, yeah, back in the days when Knott's Berry Farm used to do Christian nights. I remember that. So Mike and I have known each other a long time. Mike perpetually looks like he's about 27 years old, although, and you guys can't see him, but he actually has quite a bit of gray hair now, which I didn't notice when you left Riverside. So
it actually has gotten way more since in the last like 2-3 years.
Yeah. Well, especially this year, right?
I mean, I earned it, but I've earned every one of these.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because this, you know, everybody I talk to, it's just like, this year has no, like people are like, I think it was back in June or maybe it was January. I don't know what, like, I mean, this year has no, it's like Groundhog Day. This year has no time. I have no time perspective at all.
Yeah.
Like time has lost its meaning. You know,
we were texting with people the other day that it was actually January of this year that we were at like Mix You Live and we were at the NAMM show. It's like this year we weren't social distancing. We weren't doing any of that stuff. It's
crazy. That does not feel like it was this year. It feels like it was 10 years ago. It feels like it really feels like Groundhog Day to me. It's really hilarious. It feels like every morning I get up, we do the same thing, get on Zoom call, repeat, rinse, repeat, whatever. I wanted to have Mike on because he has quite the journey. Very few people in our industry stay at one organization for a long time and kind of go up the ranks. The other guy that we're hopefully going to have on here at some point in time, although he absolutely hates to be recorded, is Greg Baker at Saddleback. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to twist his arm and get him back on here. But he's another person that it has literally been there for 20 years. And it's so very uncommon in the church world of being, if you're on full-time staff, to last at an organization for a long time. So I wanted to kind of talk to you about what your journey is. We'll talk about other stuff too, but I wanted to talk to you about what your journey is. So tell the folks what you're doing now. Like what are your duties at Prestonwood?
Well, I came on originally as just the live sound lead guy. And then I kind of came in the midst of some cultural changes within the church and within the media and worship department specifically. And so as things kind of changed and shifted around and people left and came on, I also am managing the the lighting folks as well. But our media team, you know, the media team handles audio, video, lighting, content creation. But that's my little corner of the world. But it's not little.
So you came on just to mix. So you thought you were getting, doing the, like a retirement gig, and then you end up leading again, right?
Well, other departments. Not exactly. Cause there was discussion at some point down the line of this happening, but yeah, it was interesting coming on, going from, you know, rarely ever mixing when I was at Harvest, just because of the role I was in, to just being like the audio guy. And, right. It was a lot of fun. It still was a lot of fun. So
yeah. So before we go into what the church is doing right now in the whole, beer bug, year that we're in, that just, you know, rinse and repeat. I wanted to just talk about a little bit about like, what was your journey? Where did you start doing audio stuff and tech stuff? And like, how did you kind of get in and then eventually get on tech staff at Harvest?
Well, I was, my mom was a music teacher, big musical background with all that. And like you said, I played keys, piano, and all I really wanted to do growing up was like be a musician, be a touring guy. So I ended up getting connected with you and the band. That was like amazing for me because I had heard, been a fan of the band. And so...
How old were you when
would be 17, 18.
Yeah.
We moved two doors down from Ruth and Carl and got connected through the band through them. And then, ended up helping with the audio stuff, but it wasn't really, I mean, I didn't mind doing, I was just happy to be involved, but ultimately ended up playing keys with the band for like just a few shows for about a year. And then eventually ended up, on staff at Harvest just through different connections. I was going to high school first, and then I was going to college, and I was just working part-time as a custodian for the radio program. They were in a building across the street from the church. And eventually, long story short, I ended up doing a lot of the editing for the program. In fact, I was doing all the editing on quarter inch reel to reel with China marker and razors and the whole deal. And
all you young kids out there,
yes,
actual tape.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I was just telling somebody the other day, I can remember when someone brought in a demo of a recorder, a digital recorder, and they slowed Greg down, but without pitching him down. And it just blew my brain. I couldn't imagine how you could do that. But anyway, yeah. So I started doing that. And then eventually they farmed that out to a separate company that's still doing it today. Dave Spiker is still handling all that. But so I was going to school, I wanted to be a musician, and I was also they needed help in sound department. So I ended up kind of helping out with them, just, you know, musician, and kind of seemed like a natural fit. And I ended up where I got out of college and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was like, my boss at the time was a worship pastor. And I was like, I want to do all these things musically speaking, but I want to do, you know, I'm doing audio. And he's like, well, you're getting paid to do audio. Are you enjoying this? And I said, well, yeah. And he goes, well, go down that road and see where that takes you. So here I am. And then the more I was around music, cause I played keys for different events on and off. And then the more I was around guys that like really knew how to play, the less confident I felt about where my where my calling was going to be. And, so then eventually, you know, kind of, and a lot of our production at the time for Harvest was kind of growing at the same time with me, and we were all kind of growing together. So I ended up, as we took new steps and added different things, I ended up kind of becoming in charge of more and more things. And it was just always a really good fit. You know, I mean, I really never knew how rare it was to be somewhere for so long. But I mean, you know, if you were to have asked me, I tell people this, like, if you had asked me at 10 years, are you going to be here for 20 more years? I probably would have told you no.
Right.
You know, but then once you're there 20 years, it's like, are you going to be there 10 more years? Like, well, I mean, where else am I going to go? You know, especially as my family was growing and my roots were growing deeper. So then we just, we're doing the church events, and then we were doing the crusade events around the country and internationally. So right. Yeah, a lot of stuff. And, yeah.
Well, what did you, you were mixing the services for a long time, right?
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what you did. That was like your thing. And
yeah.
When did the, When did Greg start doing the Harvest Crusade? When did that start happening?
Those were back in the late 90s, or back in the early 90s. So we, you know, I wasn't as involved with those at the beginning. I became more and more involved. I did front of house for a few of them back in the mid 90s. And then I eventually started doing monitors. And then I kind of took over sort of as the monitor guy plus like production guy for the stage. Since I was at the stage, it just kind of made sense. When I was mixing for the church, eventually my role became such that they realized that I really needed to not be mixing all the time, because I was mixing, I was doing so many different things at the same time. I mean, I laugh about it now. I think about, you know, I was mixing, but I was also bringing down the center projector screen and unshuttering the projector. And I had all the monitors being controlled by an iPad next to me from the console back, the M7CL. I was doing that. We had our lighting console with a foot trigger. So I was triggering lighting cues with my foot. And honestly, it wasn't at the time. It just kind of became what I did. But then you start realizing like, wow, like if something were to happen to me, service would not happen. And it really, right. You know, started to open my eyes. So I, you know, we kind of transitioned me into a different kind of role, and we got other people that were more than qualified to kind of fill into those positions.
Right.
Making it smoother.
Yeah. So yeah. And Harvest definitely went through a whole lot of transition. I mean, I remember mixing there back in the '80s, when they used to do the Sunday night concerts. Here in Southern California, a lot of the Christian music scene in the '70s and eighties was promoted by Calvary Chapels, because Chuck Smith had a heart for young people and he really liked that. And, I started doing things kind of in the second wave of the Christian rock scene here in California. You know, I could tell you guys who are listening, folks who are listening, all the names of all the bands from the first wave, and nobody, I don't think anybody would remember them, but even the second wave, I don't know if anybody would remember them. But I remember going there and just in mixing. And I think the first sound console I mixed on there in Harvest, oddly enough, I think they had a Tangent. I think that was the name of the console. That was before you. That's when TJ, it was just TJ.
Yeah.
And, and then they got a Soundcraft 500 or something like that, you know, and that was the next console. But it was just so funny because it's just, you know, it was a big building. I mean, it's like how many seats is that building?
At the time, because they had to reconfigure it, but it was, you know, 2,500 seats.
Yeah, that's before they extended the balcony.
Well, you know, then the balcony mate brought it up to the 2,325 because the balcony was already in by the time I got there.
Right. So it was probably about 1,800 seats or whatever, something like that. It was this big building. It was still kind of a small, had still kind of a small church feel. So it's kind of gone way, you know, I mean, I watched it just kind of go way past where it is today, and the influence that Harvest has all over the world. You know, it's just is very, very cool. How many campuses does Harvest have now? Like satellite campuses?
Well, there's the campus in Riverside, then there's a campus in Irvine, a permanent campus. And then they had, when I left, there were two satellites that were meeting at, one's at Woodcrest School, by you, and then another one's a school in Corona. And at the moment, those are not happening because everything else is going on.
And
we also have a campus in Maui.
Yeah. Yeah, that's suffering for Jesus in Maui, right?
Yeah, I suffered there for 10 days helping them build that out.
So
for the team, man.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to, it's like, I'll never remember. This is way inside baseball. I'm sure our listeners are completely bored about this already, but I remember, I won't even say who it was, cause I don't want to, you know, offend them or anything like that, but there was a pastor. I think you probably know him. He was a worship pastor. And, I remember when he was going to the church, a big church in, I believe it was in Honolulu, and he was here locally, you know, and he was just like, yeah, we're going, God really feels like we're being called to Hawaii. And I'm such a cynical person that I'm like, man, I wish God would call me, me to Hawaii. I'd go right away, you know? And obviously, I mean, you know,
Hawaiians need Jesus too.
Hawaiian needs Jesus too. Yeah, I know. I know that. I know. I feel really bad for saying it like that, but it was just so funny when we were having the conversation. And I'm like, oh, cool. Wow. That's great. I'm not as blessed as you are that God would call me to Hawaii. But it's super expensive to live over there. And
it is.
And like right now they're super locked down over there.
Yeah.
Like crazy locked down. But anyway, well, so so you were at Harvest for 30 years, and what was your transition like to going from being in charge of pretty much everything, for the most part, to going to a completely different church with a completely different culture? Well, I don't know how different the culture is, but it, you know, you're in Texas now, so it's just even just that going from Cal. And you grew up here, right? I mean, you were here, obviously. You were you born
I
here?
I did. No, actually, I was born in the Midwest, but then, yeah, I lived there from 17, 18 to just, you know, a year and a half ago.
Yeah. So you were here for a very long time.
Yeah.
So you're pretty much, you're a California person. So once you're here for 10 years, you're pretty much from California.
Yeah.
And so, Southern California, by the way, because Southern California people and Central and Northern California, all separate, all different kinds of people. It's very different all the
different,
way up the,
different completely.
Up the coast. So everybody that listens to this, that it does not live in California, they think all of California people are out of their minds. And, sort of, you know, that we are a little bit, but the sections of the state are very different when you, between North and South. Yep. So you were here for a very long time. What's the transition been like? And, just like in a general way, what was it like? I don't want you to go too into it, cause you know, it's like, these are personal things and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But what was the decision, kind of the decision-making paradigm like to make the move, to make this move, you know?
Yeah, we, had started to feel like just maybe, the Lord was calling me to move on, and I didn't really know what that meant. Cause you know, the team and I, our team was really great, really tight. In fact, we still text each other all the time.
Yeah.
But then my son, one of my sons has got, kids, and they were living right down the road from us. And so we were seeing my grandkids all the time. And then he ended up taking a job in, the Austin area. Now my family, I moved to California, and then almost immediately my parents and my siblings moved to the Houston area. My dad was working for Minute Maid. And, so we were in Texas all the time, like nearly every year we were driving to Texas and visiting them. And so Texas in and of itself wasn't a new thing. The area where my son moved, that's, you know, Austin Central, that was different. But then once they moved, it was really hard. Cause again, our roots had kind of gone down here and or in California, and we were really close to them. So then that kind of pushed the needle towards Texas a little bit. And then long story short, this job opening popped up, and I had worked with the folks at Prestonwood working when we had done our crusade event at the AT&T Stadium. We'd done two of them there, and Prestonwood helped us with some ancillary events that we did for that. So I already had connection with them. And then when I saw the job listing pop up, I reached out to them directly. So, I mean, there's lots and lots of praying and God asking to close doors and open doors. You know, he did. And, I flew out to audition and they were happy with it, though. It's kind of funny. I kind of texted you about this the other day, but they told me to be expecting an offer. And so I flew home and I never heard anything. And so I was like, okay. And you don't want to be like, hey, so where's that offer? So I just kind of like, I didn't just say anything. And then finally at one point I was listening to one of their weekend services online, and I asked Brian Bailey, who's my boss now, I asked him a question about whether this was an original song and, or whether this was somebody else's song. And cause at the time I wasn't nearly as familiar with their music. And he answered the question. He goes, hey, did you get that offer? And I said, no. And he goes, what? So anyway, it had gotten held up in accounting. And so they had been, I found out later that they had been saying, yeah, I don't think he's interested because he's not responding, because they hadn't realized that I had never actually received it. So, but anyway, it's been really great. It's a great team. It's a great church culture. You know,
and you've been there now. How long?
Well, it was January of last year. So
wow, already been that long.
Yeah. Wow. Not a little over a year and a half.
Yeah.
And, really enjoyed it. It's a really great church, really healthy church. Jet Graham's the senior pastor here. And, church has been back open again and since the end of May, and, So it's been great to be a part of that.
Yeah. How is that? What's the, obviously big churches all have staff, you know, there's always, mm-hmm. they're always heavier staff, but do you have, what's kind of their volunteer culture there in technical ministry?
Yeah, it's really good. They're really passionate about that. Things have kind of changed obviously in the last 6 months or so, but like when this wasn't going on, they were doing Wednesday night trainings every week. We were bringing people on sometimes earlier on this for the Saturday services and doing training. So our staff, which includes content creators and camera people, which everybody was doing everything during the full lockdown, you know, but it's only 21 people. And so every other position for the most part is volunteer, covered by volunteers. I mean, I mix front of house, monitors is either a staff person or a veteran volunteer that, you know, does a really great job. And then we have broadcast engineers, and then we have three lighting staff. And between them, and then we have a volunteer for there's a Spanish study that happens on Sundays, and between all them, we get the lighting covered. So,
right. And camera people
are typically volunteers, depending on the needs, you know, if it's a smaller midweek service, like again, while we were taping for the online stuff, when COVID first hit, there were no volunteers, everything was staff. So right. Like all the content guys were pulled up off of content creation to run cameras for tapings. And, and then they slowly started bringing, you know, once things started loosening up, they started bringing volunteers back in that were comfortable coming back.
Right. How's that been? How's that? The volunteers have been pretty receptive to coming back. If they wanted to have people wanted to come back and serve.
Some haven't, you know, it's, you know, there was definitely some shortages at the beginning. To be honest, I'm not exactly sure where we are now percentage wise in that. But yeah, there somewhere we're like, I don't care. Just get me back in. I just want to be there. I'm tired of being at home.
Right.
And then there were others that were more risk averse and didn't want to come back.
It's interesting how people are just kind of figuring it out. No matter what our government leadership is saying or doing, people are just kind of figuring it out for the most part. They're like, well, I shouldn't be out because I am a person that has a lot of, you know, I'm high risk or whatever. So I'll just stay at home and watch services. And then other people are like, well, I'm, you know, I'm 17 years old. I'm probably not going to get this, you know, so like, it's probably going to be okay. You know, so whatever. It's not even a political thing. It's just people are just kind of figuring it out on their own. What's the attendance been like? Since you guys have been back?
It's been building slowly. I don't know percentage wise where we are now. I heard a number of like 70%.
Right.
The benefit that at least the Plano campus has, because we have a campus up in Prosper north of us, but the Plano campus is the worship center is really big. So they were able to bring people back and as soon as the governor opened things up and then able to socially distance them. So the they started, we're still in there for all the weekend services, but the attendance has been slowly building up. And what's cool too, is the people that are there are just excited to be there. You know, there's like an energy in the room that wasn't there before because they were, people were taking it for granted that they could come together. And, you know, the masks regulations are churches are exempt. So, there's some people that come with them on, but again, because they're able to space the pews out, you know, they have every other pew blocked off people are excited to be there.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. It's cool. People are going to find a way, right? They're going to find a way to get to do what they need to do. It's interesting because I think what you're seeing, and people are going to find a way to worship. They're going to, people want to worship. And so they're going to figure it out. Because it's a big church and it was already had broadcast and, you know, you're broadcasting. I'm imagining that you guys were on television too in Texas.
Yeah. It's called PowerPoint Ministries.
Yeah. And so, and probably have a huge, and you guys, I know you guys have a huge online ministry cause I watched it. So what are you guys going to change anything? Did you guys change anything about your online ministry when this whole thing happened? And of that, are you guys going to keep those things or did you just keep going like it was, you know, like it was the same before as before?
No, actually, there's been, so we were online, but it was more of just kind of just sending out things that we were just doing in the room, you know, at least for the adult worship. The youth ministries were more, you know, social media present. But once we went exclusively online, you know, it kind of gathered a whole audience that we didn't have before. And so cut to now, where we there's much more intentionality behind it. We have an actual online host. If you watch our services now, there's an online host that's either not a musician, that's just a host, or it's one of the worship leaders that's talking directly to the camera as the service starts, and then, you know, engaging and looking at who's commenting and addressing them, you know. And then at the end of service, we have an online closing video. So it's become kind of its own entity, because, and as also, there's a regular midweek service, online midweek service that has popped up as a result of this that didn't exist before. And that's not going away. It's been really popular. So, it's just been basically, instead of, I wouldn't call it an afterthought, because it wasn't, but it was, you know, that we had, it was basically just taking what we were doing and just kind of throwing it on Facebook Live. But, you know, emphasis, we have Roku app now. Ever since this happened, we got Apple TV app, you know, YouTube right. channel, which we already had, but we actually just in the last few weeks, transitioned one of our team members over to basically being the social media person for the church. And so, you know, that wasn't even something they were talking about before COVID hit that I'm aware of. So it's been really good to, you know, kind of increase our online presence.
Right. Yeah. It's really funny. You know, we've talked about this a lot on this podcast, and just people in general that I'm talking to. It's kind of been an interesting way of a lot of churches have found this. They really started to scrutinize what they do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been one of those things where, and I think that's good. I think it's good that we, you know, look at, cause you can kind of get in a rut and we're just doing the same thing every right. week, you know, and then Easter and Christmas are big days. And then other than that, we're just doing services. And I think it's been really interesting to watch the church, you know, kind of look at the church and go, okay, what are we doing? How are we ministering? How are we reaching our community? And even now, when we get back, you know, I hate the words, the new normal. I hate that term, but because I don't think there is. Nothing's normal.
I had wanted to actually use that expression in a just in talking to you on my own, just knowing you hated it, just to see what you'd say.
I do. I don't know why I hate that. There's just a whole list of words and phrases that I hope are banned from the English language after this is all over. And I don't think they will be, but you know, but you know, it's just whatever we end up being, whatever it ends up being when we're through this, because 2020 has been a heck of a year. There's no, and we're not even done with it. Just like that. We're getting into the third quarter, and it's just like there's a whole bunch more people getting ready to get on. There's people batting, getting ready to bat up and be on deck, and who knows what's going to happen. But somebody joked the other day. They said, "What happened to those killer hornets?" And somebody said, "Oh, they came here and they saw what was going on, and they just left and went back to wherever they came from." It's like, nah, you know, we don't want to be part of
it. It's too much for me.
Too much. overload. But I think it's been cool to watch the Big C Church, just kind of look at themselves and you know, just go, okay, how are we going to present the gospel? How are we going to do this to a culture that's kind of gotten flipped up on their side of their head, you know? And
yeah,
and because you know, I think all things being equal, I think the church does a pretty good job of getting out of its own way in a crisis. And I think when times are really good, the church is not really great at a lot of things. But when times are bad, the church kind of goes, you know, hey, this is what we're here for. So pretty much everybody I'm talking to, I've really seen a lot of like, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is, you know, because I mean, I don't know how you guys are doing it. Hopefully you've had conversations about this, but most churches I've talked to have been like, hey, this is never going away.
Right.
I mean, we have to plan like there's going to be a percentage of our population that is never going to come back in the building for whatever reason. And there's going to be a lot of people that have watched us and they've never seen us before. And I mean, I'm sure you're getting viewers. You had a TV show, so you probably were doing it already, but even online, you've probably gotten lots and lots of viewers from all over the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
That you never had before. And so that's kind of cool. You know, it's kind of cool that church is everywhere. I think that's kind of been great because it doesn't matter where you are now, you can kind of find your church that's your flavor and that speaks to you. And, you know, it doesn't matter where you are. And it's also made it so that churches are really, doesn't matter what size the church is, they're having to figure this video thing out.
Yeah.
You know? So do you guys get a lot of calls from churches, or did you, when this first thing started, to be like, hey, can you help us? Because we don't know what we're doing.
You know what? Honestly, I didn't. I'm sure that Brian Bailey did and other places did. Because honestly, again, for us, there was a lot of learning curves too. We went from when this first hit to just taking our Saturday night service and just nobody in the room or like 100 staff in the room and just broadcasting that out live, to realizing, okay, this doesn't have to happen live, to, you know, moving worship, record everything up to Fridays, and then up to Saturday, Thursdays, and then up to Wednesday, you know. So, you know, we were talking about how we kind of need to fail quickly and figure out what does and doesn't work. And, you know, we landed on a schedule and, you know, the team put out some really great content, between, you know, lighting and video. And, you know, what that did for us for audio was it allowed us to do post on all the audio instead of having to just mix it all live, you know?
Right.
So that was really good. I mean, you and I have talked about the idea of just, you know, this is the way we've always done things, doesn't live here.
Right.
You know, that kind of, you could not live like that during when this all hit. Like, this is the way we've always done things doesn't apply anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And doesn't so, work, yeah. So it was trying to figure out what didn't work. And I felt like we really landed on it. And they still, you know, even in services, they're super sensitive to the fact that, and if you're watching us on home right now, we're so glad you joined us. We understand that a lot of you guys can't make it back in, and we totally understand that. But if you can, please come back, because we're, you know, it's great to be back together again. So it's been, it's been interesting.
Are you having, you said you were, before all this happened, you were bringing volunteers in, doing training, all that kind of stuff. Are you seeing a runway where you can kind of start doing that again?
Yeah, I think they started doing some of that again. Again, we're finally, because I can think of one or two volunteers. It's funny, one that didn't want to come back in. And the first one of them didn't want to come back in because he actually has some compromised health issues. And so he was concerned about it, young guy. And then the other one was like, he goes, if you guys are requiring masks, I'm not going to come in until you aren't requiring masks anymore. So it was the exact opposite reasons for not wanting to come in.
Right.
But, you know, the training schedule is not back up to where it was before all this hit, but that's something we've been talking about, is getting everybody back in again. The audio training for the most part happens in, on the weekends for me. Like, I'll have people sitting in the booth with me and helping us out as an A2. Midweek stuff has been more about like downstairs in the broadcast booth with, you know, shading and, EIC and all that, you know, and then and being on cameras as well. So I expect as more and more events start coming back online at the church, and I don't mean online the web, but I mean coming back, that, you know, we'll start having more opportunities to do that.
Were you mixing front of house? Were you mixing a mix for the broadcast from front of house, or is that done separately?
It was, for when we first started going online, we were in a youth room that we have on site. It's about 1,000 seats. And it was basically just my board mixed, tailored. It was a separate mix to the broadcast, but it was essentially the board mix that was kind of tailored for broadcast. But then as we progressed and realized, started doing the recordings earlier and earlier, we were multi-tracking everything and then doing it in post.
Right. So now you're still, are you still doing that, or are you?
No. So now we're live.
Now you're live and it's going right.
Yeah. So we actually have a broadcast mix position downstairs. So there's an engineer down there mixing it specifically for broadcast. We're also capturing it. We had a feature song a couple weeks ago that they captured really quick and turned it around, and we did some post on it and got it got it turned around right away. So that was done in post, but, and midweek stuff is being done in post, but like the stuff on the weekends that you're watching, that's all being mixed live.
Right. Has that been a good, was that a good transition for you? Did it help you beef up your mixes a little bit when you had to go through all this stuff?
Yeah. I mean, so all of a sudden it's already going to live on in perpetuity on Facebook somewhere. Yeah. So, you know, I was already wanting it to be good. So the Saturday night service wasn't actually in this smaller room when I first came on. Last September, they moved it over to this room. So before that, it was just getting a broadcast mix from downstairs. And then we don't have a broadcast mix position in this other room. So that's where the board mix became more important. So, yeah. And then when it became exclusively online, it wasn't important, but it was also just taking a feed of what we were already doing. Right. The thrust was what was happening in the room. So then all of a sudden, when that's all that's happening, we really started working on shaping that mix to be even tighter. And then once they moved the recording process up enough to where we were able to do post on it, you know, because if you're capturing it on Saturday, it gives you virtually no time to flip the thing around. But once they moved it up, then we could move straight to post. Right. We created a whole schedule, a calendar schedule with the studio and who was going to be in there on what days mixing which events. And it came together really nice.
Yeah. Now, are you still going to be offering, how much content, how much non-service content were you offering during, like when the lockdown started? What did you guys end up doing that's non-service content online? How much of that, like kids and youth and all, like, how many different things were you guys doing?
Well, I know. So I'm not really in, like, when the youth ministry has kind of got its own thing going on for online presence, and the children's ministry did as well. They all kind of pivoted right away. I mean, the youth ministry was kind of already set up to jump into stuff online. So they just beefed that up even more. And I know that they were creating curriculum for kids online as well. Pretty fast turnaround. My kids are all grown, so I really didn't see that, but I heard great things about it.
Well, it's interesting to see that a lot of churches are staying with that stuff. Like, a lot of churches had to go online with all this different stuff, and now a lot of them are like, well, we're just going to keep doing that, you know? Which is interesting how it's affecting the tech staff, because, you know, that basically, you know, like, you know, it has to keep going. It never ends, you know? So,
yeah.
So are you guys, are you guys going to bring on more people to kind of facilitate all this? Are they going to keep doing stuff? I mean, you may not know this, but you think they're going to keep doing stuff online on a higher level now?
Yes.
They're not going to just go back and kind of abandon that stuff. That stuff is going to be there always.
Yeah. I'd say it's a new normal. And,
thank you. Appreciate
it.
You're
welcome. But it is, ding.
I'm going to have my little ding counter, new normal, ding, one, ding.
It's permanently changed in a good way. And you know, the ministry in the church itself, I don't feel like has suffered at all. It's just extended its outreach into these other areas. You know, again, recognizing that a lot of older members of the congregation, are watching online exclusively now. And trying to not make them feel like they're just getting leftovers, you know, be more intentional with engaging with them online. So I don't see it. I don't think I ever go back again. We have a new midweek online service now that didn't exist before this, that just, it was really received really well. And you've got a whole audience now that you never had, watching midweek studies.
Right. Yeah. So that's good. That's good. Well, what's on the horizon for you here in the next, if we don't have Groundhog Day, like as we come out and we don't see our shadow.
we were looking ahead at the schedule this last week. It's going to be the next 3-4 months are going to be really crazy for us, but a different kind of crazy. So the church has a pretty large school. It's called PCA, Preston Wood Christian Academy. And we are doing more events with them than we have done before, because they're needing to be in the larger room so they can spread people around. Right. So that kind of adds a dynamic and having to get that all covered. There's going to be a fall kids concert that's going to look different than it has before. So there's going to be pre-recorded elements that we're going to do for that. There's a huge Christmas program that they normally do called Gift of Christmas. And that's been postponed until next year. So instead we're going to be doing some special tapings for for PowerPoint. So capturing some, they've rented a barn up in north of here and we're going to do a video capture up there for that.
So just basically going to broadcast Christmas instead of,
well, they're going to pre-tape it and broadcast it. They're going to be doing a big tree lighting on site,
right?
With booths and stuff like that. So it's going to be a very different December than any December I've ever experienced in my adult life. So,
right. We have absolutely no idea what they're going to say at this point. We have no idea what leadership's going to be like, oh, hey, it's all good. Or go back to your houses. Nothing to see here. We don't have any idea.
Yeah.
It's definitely challenging for.
Yeah, I don't envy the senior leadership having to, make decisions in all this, because they have to take the facts into consideration, but they also have to take the optics into consideration, because they don't want to end up on the news for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. as pastors have been ending up on the news. So
yes.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me too, because it's not we're here to serve, and it's not even about what the government says. It's not about what the doctors say. It's not about science says. It's not about any of that stuff. It's basically about how people feel about it, And so the church needs to be sensitive to, like, still preaching the gospel and still growing disciples, but they have to do it in a way that meets people where they're at. And some people are just, they're never going to come back. Well, never. I don't think never, but I mean, it's going to take a long time for them to get back into a crowded room.
Yeah.
Cause I've talked to some people who are like, oh yeah, my brother, my sister, they're like, even now they're still terrified. They don't want to go outside. They're totally convinced, whatever. And it has nothing to do with whether it's right or wrong. And I'm not critiquing that person. I'm just saying it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong or what we believe. It's about what the perception of the people that are coming to church is, and churches need to be sensitive to that. And then on top of that, the leadership has to deal with all the public, with what's the government saying? Can we open the church? Can we not open the church? Can we have this event? Can we not have this event? I agree with you. I think that everybody that works in church, whether they volunteer or they're on staff or they work with churches, we need to be praying for church leaders, because these are tough decisions.
Yep.
And, I try really hard not to armchair quarterback two things, church leaders and school leaders. My wife works for a school, and I know that they, just the number of decisions that have to be made.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. So for PCA to reopen, the kids, the students are all masked up, the teachers are all masked up, and regardless of where you stand on the scientific rationale behind that, the fact is that if you're the head of school and that you can get 20 more kids that parents will allow 20 more of their kids to come to your school if people are in masks as opposed to not wearing masks, then you've got to count that cost. And so I don't blame them for any of that, because they don't want to end up being on the news for the wrong reasons. So
the bottom line is what you're calling. We did this with my wife's school. It's a Christian school. And the bottom line is, well, what's the calling of the school? Well, the calling of the school, amongst other things, is to, at least this school is, Christ-centered academics. And with like little kids, you got to go, well, these little kids need to be, there is a social interaction is like a big thing when you're a little kid.
Yep.
You need that. You need that. And so how long can these, and then of course especially with the little kids, is that parents need to go back to work and they just can't sit at home. And so the goal of the school has to be, we want to get these kids back on campus. So how do we do that? We have to meet the state requirements, but we also have to meet like I don't know how it is in Texas, but I think it's this way in most places. You not only have to meet the state requirements, but then with the county health care requirements, that all has to be met. And so this is a lot of moving parts when something like this happens. And ultimately it has nothing to do with the political agenda. It has to do with what are we called to do? How can we do it in this environment?
Yeah.
You know, and so it's, I mean, a lot of people can complain and moan, and certainly we all have our opinions. I mean, you and I talked before this about all our opinions, which will not be shared publicly, but, you know, I mean, but as you're doing ministry and you're doing whatever you're doing, you have to count those costs. Like you said, you have to go, okay, we want to do this. What hoops do we have to jump through so that we can provide that?
Right. So, yeah.
I don't envy these leaders at all. I don't envy them at all. We work with so many churches, and I've been in so many meetings and different things like that with church leaders, where they're just trying to navigate things, and it's been pretty impressive to see a lot of these church leaders just really just step up and just go, okay, this is what we got to do, and this is what this is what God's calling us to do, and we're going to do this. So,
yeah, it's interesting. It feels kind of like I was telling you that, you know, people are excited to be there. It kind of feels like we kind of turned a page in the ministry here. And I haven't been here that long, but even just talking to people that have been here, it just, there's kind of a new fire, you know, again, people not taking gathering together for granted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that's been, it's been exciting to be a part of that, you know?
Well, and I think in that whole thing, you know, I pray that there's a revival, not just in the church staffs, because, you know, I mean, you know, I was on staff for a long time. You've been on staff for a long time. You kind of get in this little bit of a bubble, where you forget what it's like to not be on staff at a church.
Yeah.
And, how do they feel? How do the people who are not on staff at the church feel? And I hope that this is kind of lights a fire with the congregations to reach their friends and reach people and, you know, do the work of the church. So,
yeah, I was just telling some people, we were doing a devotional the other day, just that, you know, there's a lot of sifting right now, a lot of winnowing happening, you know, within the church, and things that people thought were super important that are finding are not that important, and vice versa, things that they weren't, things that people just took for granted. And so, you know, like you said, the church, tends to flourish under, you know, crisis.
Yeah. Well, and I also think that, you know, I think in our personal lives, we're realizing that too. I mean, my wife and I, we've talked a lot about what's important, what's not important. You know, what do we stand for? What don't we stand for? You know, what are we willing to stand for? You know,
what hill do you want to die on?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, it's a good, I believe, you know, my life versus Romans 8:28. And I really do believe that all things work together for good for those who are love the Lord and are called to his purpose. But we have to look at it that way. And I think that the church can look at it this way, that this can be a good thing in the midst of chaos, which we're under, where there's just so much chaos in the world. And, you know, as we open every month, there's new chaos. There's another, it's like, okay, it's a, you know, it's August 1st. It's October 1st. It's like, what's behind door number three? You know, it's like, who knows? But really, I mean, you know, I don't know how people can survive without a relationship with Christ.
Me either.
I don't know. In really this world right now, I don't know how people are managing without having, hope that there's something else. I think we're seeing it, is that people don't think there's an afterlife. They think this is all there is. So they're making irrational decisions, based on believing that this life is it. You can't make a good decision when you're panicked, you know? And so it's very interesting to see all that happen. And that's just one more reason where, you know, the church needs to preach the gospel and continue to do that. And, you know, I think the churches are actually going to grow through this whole thing. And I think one of the cool things about online is that people get reached for Jesus. Like, just, you know, we have no idea how many people are getting online and seeking out churches right now.
Yeah.
You know, we just don't know. We're not going to know for a while, I think, you know?
Right.
And it's so easy because we've lowered the bar of how the entry level, because it used to be people needed to get up, get in their car, go to church, be mortified that they had been in a church in 30 years or never been in a church and they were scared to go into a church or whatever. We've just made the ticket price a lot lower.
Well, so, I think you see both ends of it. You see people that are like that. And then you have the other end of things that people were just casual churchgoers that were only in it for the entertainment value or whatever, you know, and have been like, you know what, it's just kind of cool not having to get up and go to church and, you know, kind of go in the other direction with it. So again, I feel like it's a sifting process and
It'll the overused statement of my life is it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
I need that on a shirt because I think I've said that more times in my life than almost anything else. It really will be interesting to see what happens. But well, how's just on a personal note, how's it been going from California, living most of your life in Southern California, moving to Texas?
It's been good. Yeah. I mean, it's a process of, you know, it just takes time to get to know the area and get to know people and stuff, but you know, it's a great state. Again, we spent a lot of time in the state over the last few decades. And so, you know, now we're living a few hours away from my son and their four kids with the fifth on the way. And then, my youngest son actually moved out here last year and he's on staff at the church now with me. He's one of the graphic designers there. And so they have a son. So I've got all but one of my sons living here in Texas with me. So, that's been really cool to have.
And you have other family there too. So.
Yeah. I've got family down in the Houston area still.
Right.
And, it's been good, honestly.
So sometimes you have to drive for 3 days because that's how Texas is. You could actually literally start at one side and drive an entire day and you're not actually through Texas.
Yeah. Well, when we used to drive out here, when you get to El Paso, Texas, you were halfway to my parents' house.
Right. From California.
Literally, you were halfway to my parents' house in El Paso. So, it's pretty country. Great people. So, it's been really good. I mean, obviously we miss our friends and family back there. And, you are good reason why I'm here. Cause when I first started talking about all this stuff, I sat down with you at Chipotle for 3 hours and we talked about all this stuff.
So I talked you into leaving Southern California.
No, you didn't do that, but I needed a sounding board for like what I was going through because I had never been through that before. So,
I think that brings up a really good point. I've talked to a lot of, and this isn't, I'm not, please everybody don't call me, but, this brings a great point up as to you got to have people around you that you trust that will be a good sounding board, that will ask good questions. I mean, I do. I have those people. I have those people that I call. Don't be an island. I think that's a great point. Don't be on an island. I know there's a lot of you listening right now that are probably struggling in your church because you're burned out, because you're tired. I can't tell you, you know, Mike, I'm sure you've talked to a lot of people that a lot of these tech people are working 60, 70, 80 hours. And there just seems like there's no end in sight, especially if you're at a smaller church where you don't have a big staff or staff at all. And you're the person and you're expected to get all the stuff to work.
Like you said, like right now, the church tech people are kind of the only people that are doing audio, working in audio right now.
Well, I saw like Christianity Today or probably wasn't them, but it was somebody tweeted the three most important people in the church are the pastor, the worship pastor, and the technical director. And I talked to
the IT guy.
For sure. Well, sometimes the tech director and the IT guy are the same guy. Yeah. I think that a lot of folks, and I've talked to so many in this past 6 months who are just like, it's like a hamster wheel, man. There's just like no end in sight. And my biggest thing is, you know, you've got to have people around you that you can be a sounding board for you that are not necessarily, especially that are not in the ministry that you're in. They can be in ministry, but not in your church. Mm-hmm. They need to not be personally involved in your church. Right. They need to be somebody that maybe in another church. I mean, if you don't have friends in other churches that are tech people or musicians or whatever, you need to develop those relationships. Cause you need to have somebody you can go and have lunch with, you know, and just talk to and be honest with, and just, you know, just talk some things through. And the other thing that I've talked to a bunch of people one of my big encouragements to everybody who's listening is, look, if you're underwater, you need to go to your leadership, not in a passive aggressive way. I mean, not that tech people can be passive aggressive.
No, that never
happens. Just go and say, hey, look, I'm burning out. And I know you don't want me to burn out. I know you don't want, because you know, you want me to be healthy, but I'm getting to a place where I'm not healthy and I need something to happen. So yeah. You need either to hire an extra person, or we need to figure out, you need to help me with a plan or something like that. It's got to happen. So
yeah,
you got to have friends around you. You got to have people that care about you. Ministry, this sounds harsh. And I don't mean it, this is not directed at the Lord. But ministries come and go.
Yeah.
But the people you have around you, your circle of friends, your circle of people that are in this ministry with you, or this thing we call, you know, church AV, you need to have a circle of people that you trust, that you can talk to. And that's one of the reasons that Mike started Church Tech Weekly, and that we'd done so many of these things back in the day with the Tech Directors Roundtable, and that's why MXU got started, and that's why, you know, on and on and on, is because Lead Labs, I mean, all this stuff is because, you know, we're better together, and we want a tribe, and we want people to not feel like they're alone.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, and that was something like in the first iteration of this podcast, you used to ask people at the end, like, what would you say to yourself 20 years ago?
Yeah.
And I actually, because when I used to.
So what would you say to yourself?
Well, that's what I was saying. First of all, well, not 20 years ago. I don't know. I can go back further than that. But
I need to remember all those good questions, because yes. apparently that version of this podcast was better than the version I'm doing right now.
No, the first thing is okay, the mullet does not look good. So you just need to know that. And that earring hole will be there for the rest of your life, even when you're almost 50. So there's some word of advice for myself. But no,
my daughters would always look at those pictures and like, not a good look, Dad. Not a good look. I'm like, well, I said, I wasn't alone. That's the scary thing. I wasn't alone.
Well, but then the other thing is that I really didn't do a good job of networking for the longest time. Not that I'm great at it even now, but of reaching out to people and connecting with other people and having, like you said, having a sounding board and having people, and not to say that I was necessarily burning out all those years, because I wasn't, but my point is just, you know, in the example of just all the things that I would do on my own at front of house, instead of delegating that and letting other people that could do it better than me step into those roles and do it. And it wasn't because like, I just felt like I'm better than everybody, or that I'm the only one that can do this, but because I could do it, I just did it. And just realizing that there's a place for other people to step in and fill those roles. So just, you know, again, making those connections. And it wasn't really until I kind of was made a director in 2015 that I even started to go to WFX or some of those other conferences was able to just, because then they gave me that position originally. I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. In fact, even now people would be shocked to know how little I know. And, so just having those people to get to know, I mean, I've known you're an exception.
Don't tell anybody.
Oh, okay. Don't tell anybody. But you know, I mean, you're one of the exceptions just because I've known you for so long, but anyway.
Yeah. And we randomly ended up in the same industry. Like, you know, doing the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah. I would have thought that when we knew each other back in the day with Christian bands and stuff, I would never have thought that I was, in fact, if you had asked me 5 minutes before I accepted the job at Saddleback, if I would work at a church, I would have told you I would never work with. In fact, I told Ken Robertson, when he offered me the job the first time, that I would never work for a church. I said, nah, because I was working for an integrator and we did tons of churches. And I was like, nah, there's too much politics. And it's just, it's all so hard. Every meeting I go to where we're doing a church install or stuff like that, just the politics of it. And there's just so much going on. And I just don't want to have anything to do with that. I said that in like, I don't know, August. And then I was mixing the Christmas services that year because God has a, God has a great sense of humor.
He does.
And you should just, you never say things like that. You literally never say things like that because I was very vehemently against it. And then I was on church staffs for another 20 years after that. So, but that's the truth. I mean, it's, I think that's a good thing. And, you know, I mean, I, anybody that knows me knows that I believe in networking. It's absolutely important to have, as my dad used to say, have a Rolodex full of smart people, you know, who are willing to take your phone call. You know, and so if your phone's not full of smarter people than you that are willing to take your phone call, you need to get on that.
Yeah. Well, and, that, exactly.
You know, and that's just the truth. I mean, I'm like you, I'm not that smart and I'm really not that good at a lot of things, but I know a lot of smart people and, they like working with me. So I've may have been able to.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's, you know, at Harvest and here, it's like, I really leaned into people that were, that know the technical stuff a lot more than I do. Cause honestly, they're just, in some ways, I don't want to sound like I'm trying to be lazy, but in some ways I just didn't, I wasn't passionate about those things. I was more passionate about the mixing and the people and the, you know, helping to make things happen. But when it came down to a lot of the details of stuff, I really relied heavily on the people that I was working with for and leading to make me look good.
Well, and the truth of the matter, that's key, big key. But you know, the truth of the matter is that a lot of leadership in churches is cultivating people and figuring out what they're good at and figuring out how to make them better at what they're good at so that they can, but they're all, I mean, I don't want five of me on my staff because for a couple of reasons. One, that's like five times of me being annoying to myself, which that's going to be terrible. And second of all, it reminds me of the Jerry Seinfeld, the Seinfeld show where he was dating himself. Jeanine Garofalo played a female version of him. And at the beginning, he loved it. And by the end of it, he was like, I'm a terrible person, you know? you know, I want to cultivate a staff that completes, it's like the body of Christ. It's like a technical body of Christ where, you know, you have two arms and two legs and feet and toes. And you, and that is when the technical staff works great. And I don't have to be good at everything. You didn't have to be good at everything. You just had to be able to lead everybody well and be able to cultivate. And that's hard. I mean, you know, I mean, I think you'd agree with me that it's hard to cultivate good people, but when you do, it's kind of a great thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of more of my, I'm more relational than that, you know? So for, you know, it's, you know, just kind of investing in people because you want people to bring their best to the table, but if they don't feel like they're being led well or being appreciated, then you're not, you know, not to say that I was doing it just to get that out of them, but it just, it makes the whole team better.
No, I mean, you want to, I mean, if you've got people under you in tech ministry, whether it's all volunteer, whether you're volunteer, if you're only putting them in those positions to get the job done on Sunday, you're missing a huge opportunity to help people be the people that God wants them to be and to help them find that place in the body of Christ where they can do something that they're actually really good at and serve the church at the same time. You're missing an opportunity. And most people want to be part of a family, whether you're on staff or you're volunteering, people want to be part of a family. They want to be someplace where they feel like they're being fulfilled. And so that to be a tech leader, you have to understand that. You have to understand love language. You have to understand, you know, people's skill sets and, you know, you have to see them like I will tell you this, when I first started mixing at a church, My tech director who hired me, Ken Robertson, I don't think I had any business mixing those services. I mean, honestly, I was good. I was an okay sound engineer, but I mean, the politics of it all, of doing everything like that, that was, I'm a people person, but I was super rough around the edges, and I would say things before I thought about them. And, that's the number one thing that ministry teaches you is how to,
yes,
it's how to curb your thought process. But the one of the things, so many things that I appreciated about Ken, but one of the things is that he saw me for who I was going to become and not who I was at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big thing as a leader. You have to see your people for who they're becoming, not just for who they are at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was me too. I remember the first like mixing live toms we did. We were at the local community college there doing like an Easter service. And I remember like they let me mix this. I was thinking, what were you thinking? Cause I'm actually looking and going, do these toms sound correct? Is this the way this is supposed to sound? Like I had no idea, you know, but again, they trusted me and, you know, ultimately it paid off for them.
Yeah. And for you, I mean, you know, for me too.
It's, yeah. It's, obviously
it's a both and because it's like, yep. You know, if you cultivate people, and give them some leeway and, you know, you can make them into God's going to do what God's going to do with that person with or without you.
Yeah.
And I've always felt like it was a privilege to be part of the journey of a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, in the 30 years that you were at Harvest, you've been part of the journey of a lot of really great people.
Yeah.
That have come in and out of your life. And that to me, I mean, for me, as a relational person, that was more important than any of the other stuff. I mean, looking back on it, like the tech stuff, yeah, it's great. We got to make it happen. Yeah. Mixes got to be good. Lights got to be great. All that stuff. But you know, it's just watching people in ministry, having them grow and seeing where they go after that. That's the biggest thing.
All those guys still, I mean, like I said, we still keep in contact. They're all, you know, rock stars in their own right.
Making
stuff happen. You know, with us being gone.
Yeah. And right now with all the challenges is, you know, everything that you poured into them, they're taking that and they're running with it in a totally different way. Yep. Well, it has been great having you on this podcast, Mike. I'm really glad. And we haven't actually talked. We've been emailing or texting or whatever, but actually haven't talked, especially since this whole thing. And I didn't get to see you at NAMM because I didn't go to NAMM, but, first year in, oh wow, so long. I didn't go to NAMM. It was funny because they asked me, well, Duke was there, but they asked me, hey, we need you and Brian to go videotape a bunch of people like locally. Yeah. So while we're out there, would you do that? Or do you want to go to NAMM? And I was like, nope, no, I don't want to go to NAMM. I said, I've been to enough NAMMs. I've been to like 30 some NAMMs, you know, or more than that. And, you know, and I was just like, I don't want to get the NAMMtasian, you know, the NAMMpocalypse, you know, had no idea that
COVID
had no NAMMthrax, had no idea about COVID. That wasn't even on the radar, you know, but, it was just so funny because NAMM is almost always where I get sick. That's like the one thing a year. Oddly enough, I kind of wonder how many people had COVID.
I have had that same conversation. Like how much did NAMM have to do with just spreading that around?
Because there are literally people from all over the world at NAMM, all over the world. And so you're wondering how much, it's actually a little bit terrifying when you think about big trade shows now, you're just like, I don't know about that. Okay. Damn. Well, whatever. But yeah, so that's the first NAMM. Like I said, it's the first NAMM I haven't gone to in a very long time. So, but it was good having you on. I'm glad you're doing well. If people want to ask you questions, for any reason, shape or form, how can they get a hold of you?
I'm on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, although I don't get a lot of traction on Twitter, but, for those two, I'm the Mike Smith, MIC. So it's underscores between the Mike and Smith. So the Mike Smith, you can find me there. My email address here at the church is msmith@prestonwood.org. So, you can shoot me an email.
And just so you guys know, Mike's a great guy. He would be happy to answer your questions. He likes helping small churches and other churches, big churches and whatever. We're all better together. Pretty much anybody I have on this podcast is going to be somebody like that. If you haven't realized that by now, that if we have information snobs, I generally am not going to have them on. So, you know, that doesn't excite me at all. But I don't know if Twitter is good for anybody at this point. So
just, I don't
so
know. You know, it's a dumpster fire for the most part.
Yeah, I stay on it because, you know, I have a lot of followers and I feel like, and sometimes I'll get a lot of traction off of something I say or do or a link I'll post. And then other times it'll be just like, I've got this great thing I want to share, blah, blah, blah. And it's crickets. Nobody, so I'm like, okay, well, whatever, you know? Yeah. So
I'll surf it occasionally, but I mean, yeah. I, when I post anything, I almost never get any traction off of it.
Yeah. I look at it probably Twitter. I only look at probably twice a day, maybe. Mm-hmm. I've kind of gone to turning notifications back on. So I actually don't ever have to look at Twitter unless somebody tags me or something like that. Then it pops up in my, you know, it tells me, but I still love Instagram just cause you know, I like that.
Yep.
Facebook is a mixed bag.
Yeah.
Cause you never know. And cause Facebook, you don't know if people are actually seeing your posts or not. So
yes.
Anything could be happening. I mean, it was like,
except your stories, Facebook stories, it tells you how many people have seen it.
That's true. But anyway, well, Mike, thanks a lot for being on.
Thank you.
Yeah. Have a good rest of your week. Have a good weekend. And, everybody else, thank you for listening as usual. Please go to, now that we just bagged on all the social medias, but please go to all the social medias. It's Church Tech Profiles on Instagram, Facebook page. We have a Facebook page, and it on Twitter, it's Church Tech Pro, because of course on Twitter, you run out of letters in every way, shape or form, even in your name. Go there and please follow us, like, subscribe. And one thing I'm asking is that you guys go to iTunes and find the podcast and give us a good rating and give us a good review. And if you're going to give us a bad rating and a bad review, don't go to iTunes. I don't want that. So just so you know, only good ratings and good reviews, and feed the algorithm monster with good stuff. So anyway, all right, folks, thanks for listening. We really appreciate you guys, and stay strong, stay healthy, and have a good week, and we'll talk to you later.